This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
So there's so much going with your use of space and the composition of shots, and I want to come to that. But to begin with, it seems like the world of ghosts is as complicated and as complex as the world of humans who are living here. And I mean, they're like naughty ghosts and ghosts who disturb, ghosts who are children, ghosts mm-hmm. who are adults, and ghosts who want compensation. And so I'm curious how, like, when you began, then let's just begin from where you began, like, thinking about these two neighborhoods, Ratmakan and Jaglan, and were you like interested initially at this neighborhood as a way to talk about the displacement that was happening here, or did you encounter, did you know that there was this graveyard before, that the ghost stories were there? Or because it seems like the stories of the ghosts and the stories of human displacement or an anticipated displacement, they're all so very entangled. Mm. So what came first? Or okay. Did it all,
well, yeah. I've done a few projects in this same area. And so in the past, I've looked at how that area hadn't been mapped in a Cartesian sense. So in the local city maps, there was this blank. And that was like a collaborative project I did in 2008. And we sort of looked at informal economies there and ways that people self-organise, because these both of these communities are squatter settlements. So they were built on these former graveyards. So in some of those shots, you probably notice there's gravestones built into the sort of built environment. And so that was a way of like trying to understand this. And then in 2013, on one of my visits, I was visiting a friend who I collaborated on that project with in Indonesia, and she was like, this area's been gentrified because the local mayor had announced that he wanted to basically gentrify a 4-kilometre radius around the main tourist strip, which encapsulated both these areas. And so this development had already started, and it just felt like all those ghost stories were paralleling what was about to happen or was happening in that area. And so they just became this metaphor for that gentrification that was happening.
So the ghost stories were sort of, you knew about them before.
Yeah. Yeah. So I met the Ghostbuster in 2008, and he spoke to me a lot about like hierarchies of ghosts. And there's a lot of types of ghosts in that area. So there seems to be, with the types of ghosts, ones that fall into the category of economics. So because it's quite a low socioeconomic area, you can sort of see that parallel where there's ghosts that you can buy and you can keep in little bottles, and they'll go out, like there's one called a tuyul who will go out and steal small amounts of money for you. But if your ghost is caught and someone like cuts off the ghost's arm, then in real life your arm will be cut off. And so there's sort of like these repercussions as well. And there's a lot of ones to do with money or sex as well. So there's like a flawless female white horse ghost, and the husband of the household has to get permission from his wife. This is how the Ghostbusters described it to me, from his wife to have sex with this ghost. And if she grants permission, then he can sleep with this ghost, and then the horse ghost will ship money for them. So there's a lot of ones to do with economics. And then there seem to be these themes, but then there's also these ones that are really specific to the area. So in one part, there's a woman that a lot of people have seen, a Chinese woman with long hair on the Chinese graveyard side, that just sort of haunts one particular corner, and a number of people have mentioned that they've seen her. And there's one on their badminton court, which is just an empty pitch really, but it's a pochong, which is, you know, a sort of the most commonly sighted ghost, because it's the way that in traditional Muslim burial they wrap the ghosts in white cloths, but they look a bit like lollies. So they've got these, or candies as you would call them here, they'd have these sort of wrapped or knot around there. And so a lot of people see this pochong haunting a particular place. So I was kind of interested in the ones that were really specific to the area as well. But yeah, just that importance of the role of the first time I met the Ghostbuster, I don't think I didn't like I like I keep calling him a ghostbuster because I've always sort of called him that, but he's actually more of a ghost negotiator. Like, you sort of see his personality and his techniques in the film of how gentle he is and how considered he is about the way that he does negotiate with ghosts. He doesn't sort of have this like attitude that a lot of developers have to gentrification, which is this sort of pushing people out really rapidly. He's more about talking them through or giving them compensation or an offering package or acknowledging that sometimes they want to come back and visit the place they were at, or trying to figure out a way to, you know, make that displacement a bit easier on them in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of really interested in the way that he sort of spoke about his intricacies, but also that way that he describes some of the development in the area and uses the same language. Like, he does say compensation package or offering, and he sort of mm-hmm. says that with this relocation as well of people.
Mm-hmm. And did you find people in the neighborhood to be very forthcoming about the way they shared the stories about ghosts, or
yeah.
were they initially a bit hesitant? Or, I mean, you mentioned some of the workshops you did with children. Could you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, so to sort of contextualize the making of the film, I did like a 3-month residency in Yogyakarta, and I often work with people to make projects. So as a particular collaboration, I ran ghost drawing workshops with the kids there, and mm-hmm. this is a area where they don't have many resources at all, so even just bringing like black paper and white pens and, you know, doing a drawing workshop was actually, you know, like the head of the kampung was really positive about that, just really simple gesture. And it was a way for me to reconnect with the children of the area, because the last time I'd been there, even though it's only a few years ago, those kids had worn around. They were sort of grown up and not around. So there's this new generation of children, and even though some of the elders remembered me, it was a way for me to reconnect with those kids. And so we did these drawing workshops, and then what I did with those drawings was had them embroidered onto one of the interiors of my inflatables, so it became this like inflatable ghost house. So mm-hmm. at the end of the residency, I showed the film and set up the ghost house, and all those drawings they looked at with like counterfeit UV torches, so it was like a glow-in-the-dark ghost house. And it was a way to, to be able to, you know, connect with them. But it was really interesting because a lot of the adults, I was like, do you want to draw a picture too? And they were like, oh no, because I don't want to, because I'm scared that mm-hmm. The ghosts will attach themselves to me if I draw them. Mm-hmm. So the kids were a lot, you know, less fearless, a lot more fearless to be able to draw them, because they didn't have that fear of it. And it was just the way that people sort of shared their stories, it was really matter of fact. It's like, oh yeah, there's a ghost there and this happened. Like, the way that they're casually talking, describing their ghost stories in the film is how they speak about them, which is, it's not something that's, you know, so there's a bit of fear in some way, but it's just so part of coexisting.
Yeah, and it seemed like it was like just living alongside, as in like they have sort of found a way to live together or cohabit in some ways, a way to sort of think about how one can share a space. So it's not so much like the way often we think about ghosts is like a way of sort of haunting or being haunted. Is that element also there, you feel? Or like something like past sense coming back to you, you're getting possessed by? Is it more like sort of almost domesticated? Like,
I think there's a bit of both. And I think it comes between those classes. So like the woman in the shot with the bird cages, and she speaks about being possessed by 3 genderwus. And it's, she was sick for, you know, over a month or something, being possessed. And so there is definitely this fear of being possessed by ghosts, but there's also this, I guess, this comfort in knowing these healers and these ghost negotiators to be able to evict those spirits from themselves as well. But there's definitely a fear, but then there's some that are like the lower class ghosts, the pochongs and stuff. It's like, oh, it's a bit scary, but they're just around. Like, even in the apartment building, it's like she's there, and it's really chilling, but she lives there, you know. It's not like they're trying, like a lot of people sort of don't try, if they see a ghost, they're not trying to evict that ghost straight away. They're just, it may be scared of it, but it just lives there, and there's kind of this acceptance as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, one question which I've been sort of itching to ask, containing myself for this long, was like, and something which is almost a pattern in the way you compose a lot of your shots, is like having a mirror. These sort of architectures which look like frame within frames. We look at sort of some of the testimonies from your interviews, which on mostly in reflection. So is that like, are you in some ways concretizing that whole metaphor of mirror world? Are you, I'm just speculating, of course, and I might be all wrong about this, but is it also like you as a filmmaker are helping in conjuring ghosts in some sense, or in what way is it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's this whole sort of history of scrying and looking, speaking to the spirits through mirrors or reflective surfaces, mm-hmm. but it is also this sort of tactic where you are able to have a talking head, but it's not just a talking head, and have a sort of vignette of the kampung, because, I mean, visually the kampung is so interesting for me, mm-hmm. from, like, you know, growing up in a Western environment, to be able to see some of those activities, and, you know, it just, a lot of it is chance of what happens behind, like, you know, the little boy with the dragon outfit, those kind of moments, those, mm. you know, it's not, we didn't say perform for us in the background to make the shot like that, but it's just, that's how it is, and that's, it also shows those spaces that those children play in the apartments. Mm-hmm. It's like a little corridor, and that's because they've been evicted from the kampung, they're sort of moved up into the public spaces, become these like narrow slithers rather mm-hmm. than this kind of open, like open access, and the kids that they play with will also change, because it'll probably be restricted to the floor rather than, you know, it's still where the parents can observe them, rather than in a kampung where it's a bit more open, and you see the kids riding their bikes around, and they have a bit more of an opportunity to explore in that way.
And to talk then much more about like the use of space, but also like the different kinds of mirrors you use, like rear view mirrors of bikes when you show them, or like the Ghostbuster or the Ghost Expert is shown in a much different way. Could you talk a bit about which selections for what? Why?
Yeah, well, I mean, all the mirrors were bought in Indonesia for, and it was trying to, it was, you know, trying to sort of describe someone's personality a bit mm-hmm. through those, and they're all very Indonesian mirrors, you know, mm-hmm. like the Javanese carving, or those, like those plastic ones are really common as well, like, so it was just trying to find different frames that would suit a particular story or a particular personality as well. Yeah, but just, you know, in a lot of ways it's a technique to be able to have a frame and have those interesting frames. But also because, you know, I work in a visual art context mostly, when the film's exhibited, the mirrors are part of the installation. So it's usually a room with the mirrors set up, so, and then the film. So you sort of see these reflections of the film in all the mirrors and yourself, mm-hmm. and there's these kind of layers and frames within frames. And,
mm-hmm. and I'll just ask one last question, maybe before we sort of branch off to more interesting questions. And this has been my sort of experience with working with some filmmakers who've sort of made films in India on displacement, whether it's urban or rural. And often I find that one of the rhetorics used against a certain kind of development discourse which goes for gentrification, which promotes that, or which just displaces, whether it's indigenous populations in particularly forested lands in India, or some of the urban displacement in, say, a city like Bombay or Mumbai, is this idea that there have been displacement is a continuing saga, that there were displacements before. In the case here, there seems to be that too, that there is a memory of eviction. And in some concrete sense, it seems that the people who were evicted were ghosts, because there was a graveyard there. And I'm curious how then, like, it almost seems as like the rhetoric is that, in some sense, then we have to remember that memory of eviction, but also think of including the ghosts also as stakeholders in this debate about whether we want to be displaced, whether we should be evicted, what should be the compensation. I mean, how do you look at this going back? And then going back is to the ghosts, literally.
I guess I haven't really... I guess I'm trying to... Making this project, I was really thinking about displacement. That was like the key theme, right? Mm. And it was more showing that cycle, that it is this... like displacement and change is this kind of continual cycle. And that was more how I was sort of just describing that. And it is acknowledging that the evictions of the ghosts for a long time within this particular community is now being reflected in their lives, like in the living life. But it's also this cycle that does continue, because perhaps when the people in the kampung pass away, they might become the ghosts who are haunting that area. So it's this sort of cycle within cycle that continues.
And I realized from this film that, like, in some sense, I mean, ghosts are the people one should look for lessons about displacement, because they're always being asked to be displaced, like, and they just move from one place, leave the body, move to another body.
Yeah.
Okay, should we? Yeah. Questions?
It's a terrific film. Just incredible composition in the shots, and just really beautiful, beautifully made. And thank you. And my question is, the ghosts seem to have a highly developed structure of compensation for their own displacement. And I'm wondering if that framework that the people have learned from ghosts is carried on in their negotiation. Has that become part of the negotiation for the physical displacement of the people as they get moved out of these processes or spaces?
Well, I think ideally, I kind of see the ghost negotiator or the ghostbuster as maybe someone we can learn from, in the way that maybe people like developers or people in those positions of power to be able to evict people could learn from the way that he speaks about eviction. And, you know, really, he's got this really kind of caring attitude, like he sort of knows that he has to move the people on, which is like sort of a metaphor for urban change, right? It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just when it becomes like rapid development or gentrification in that like rapid sense, that it becomes difficult and a problem and maybe not the best way to deal with urban change. Whereas he sort of talks about like carrying ghosts and really sort of caring for them. And there is that parallel to seeing that, but I don't think the developers are looking at him for like it's a different sort of world. Whereas, you know, a lot of the people in that film sort of spoke about how they didn't get compensation for being moved, even though some people did. But, you know, a lot of people in reality, because they are squatters, they feel that they don't have rights. And what's really interesting is that word that they're using for squatter in Javanese, the word for squatter is actually translates as parasite. As parasite, which and that's the way that really they think about themselves. Like, they're just like, if I'm asked to leave, I'll just leave, you know, because I don't have rights, I'm a squatter. Whereas in my experience of squatting, it was like, no, it's like, you know, the fight was part of the thing, and the struggle was there to be able to highlight, you know, space and those relationships to it. So it's a very different attitude that they have, and they don't feel that they have sort of ownership of a place, because they,
Is that Yogyakarta? Is that the name?
Yeah, Yogyakarta. Yeah, it's sort of a smaller city in, like near Jakarta in Java. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool. I had a question about the religion in the film, because it seemed like it was very animistic, shamanistic, and developed. They had all these categories of ghosts and layers of ghosts. But at the same time, I presume they were all Muslim. So did those two religions come into conflict with each other at all? Was there tension there?
Well, I think the indigenous sort of religion to that area is animism, right? So it's, I guess the belief is kind of a mixture of those. So it's like animism with a kind of thinly veiled, like, well, I mean, they're all Muslim, but it's sort of on top of that. So over time, it's become this sort of fusion of both. But animism is pretty underlying in the way that most people sort of think about spirits and ghosts and stuff. But because, yeah, the indigeneity, which, you know what I'm trying to say, is definitely there. So, yeah.
This is also just in response to this conversation. You have to keep in mind that pre-Islamic spirituality is actually preserved in a lot of Arabic culture. So the jinn, I saw that word in there, that appears in Arabian Nights. These are spirits that can grow as tall as the sky and black. And so I was reminded of that.
Yeah, yeah. And they're like one of the higher kind of class ghosts, which are really hard to move on.
So. There's some scary, yeah. Scary ghosts.
Hey, thanks, Keg. So I guess I think a lot about haunting and displacement in like the U.S. context. And one of the things that it's felt kind of tangible, say, to go to a site where there used to be public housing projects, and then they're not there anymore. And you're like walk into an empty lot, or you walk into, you know, a big box store or something that replaced it. And there's a way that if you knew what was there, then you kind of have that memory. But then even if you really didn't know what was there, I've been able at some sense to be able to kind of sense that there was something there. I mean, it's sometimes just sort of obvious in the configuration of architecture, right? You think there's no way that this particular development could have sort of historically, been allowed. And so, just by interpreting that the architecture that it's quite new and that it had to replace something also really significant and substantial. So there's ways that we sort of get these cues all around us all the time as we navigate urban space about what might have sort of existed prior. But so I've always felt like sort of like haunting is an appropriate way to think about that history. But I'm curious, since you've given actually like much more active kind of in thought to this subject, is it sort of outside of a context in which there's an explicit engagement with talking about ghosts, like there's explicit ghosts, how do you feel like, sort of using haunting as a metaphor to talk about displacement works? Like, is it entirely appropriate? Is there a way that it's kind of demeaning in any way to like the human beings that say might have actually been displaced? You know, just sort of, I guess I'm just sort of wondering your take, like, how adequate or how useful is haunting as a metaphor for displacement in a sort of general sense?
I guess it is. In some ways it depends on how people are moved on, right? So if it's a sort of if people are happy to be relocated, like some of the ghosts, maybe the kind of spirit, like, I don't know if I'd use the word haunting, but like maybe that kind of this spiritual side of a place, or the spirits are kind of could be used to describe that kind of relocation or that change that happens. Because sometimes, like, it's often that you do, you know, if someone says this place used to be an asylum, or, you know, used to be a jail, or, you know, those converted spaces, you do often think about that sort of history. And you think about, especially when it's a site of, say, torture, or, it's had this sort of dark history, people think about it a lot more. Whereas, I don't know what an example is, the first thing that came to my mind was clown school, which which is actually not a good thing, I don't think. But, you know, like, I was trying to think of something happy, right? But, you know, in some way, some other way, in some other way, it's like the antithesis of that might not have that same feeling, because I know that feeling of, like, going into a place that was a site of torture is really kind of overwhelming, and you can't help not think about that sort of history through that feeling of just what you associate with a particular place or an institution in that way.
I guess sort of in response to both of you, I mean, I feel like part of why the film is great is that it's not trying to be, I mean, part of this discussion is supposed to move into, you know, a local context here and how this makes us think about Philly, but a lot of what the film does is just right there, and it's people processing their own experiences with displacement and with ghosts that are clearly intertwined, but not necessarily, you know, just as metaphor. It's a very, like, real lived thing. So I think, like, that's why it works so well, too, is that it is just there. And when you think about it here, I mean, even just so much of it has to do with, like, attitude, I guess. Part of what you're saying about, like, some ghosts are happy to be displaced, and, you know, also it's about outlook in terms of squatting being seen as being parasitic. So it's just even just on that basic level, part of me, I think about the Ghostbuster, and if that was a metaphor going on in Philly, I think people would be pissed, you know, like, if you know, it was supposed to be similar, that it was all about negotiation and compensation, you know, I don't think that's how people see gentrification. Well, I don't think that's how people further west and further southwest see gentrification in Philly. I don't know about other neighborhoods as much, but I don't know. It's just something that I just wanted to comment on.
Yeah, I get... Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. I think, I mean, something that we're, like, they speak a lot about offerings and compensation, whereas something that isn't really explicitly said is community, right? Which is, you know, it's not a monetary thing. And that's something that this community, like, this area has, like, a really strong sense of community, like, the way that everyone sort of co-parents everyone else's kids and everyone looks after each other. There's, like, a public cleaning roster. You know, like, most people live in, like, a private space like this, but the public space is where everyone interacts. So most people are interacting with each other constantly and looking after each other and, you know, cleaning the public space together. They have a security patrol. They have a women's group that cooks food together. These kind of community things, whereas... you know, a compensation to move from there isn't really anything. And something that they don't, that I learnt through other people, is that the compensation that they receive is so small. Like, it's so insignificant that they wouldn't even be able to rent a place somewhere else for a year. So, you know, it's, you know, insignificant. They lose their community and things like that. And, you know, it's the same with West Philly. It's a community. So it's something that compensation isn't really going to... It's not going to be significant, and it's not really... You can't replace that. It's not a monetary thing.
And your statement about how people would be pissed here if there was that kind of compensation... And when I think about ghosts in Philly, I think about how lucrative it is. I think about, like, Eastern State, and I think about all of our historic sites, and how culturally different it is, and how it's capitalized on in such a different way.
Thank you so much. I was just thinking about the exhibition sort of concept and how it's, like, implicitly displaceable in a, like, a really positive way. And you said it was an inflatable structure. And I guess I was just curious about, like, public outcry over this displacement of these communities and whether or not you were able to use that mobile, I'm assuming that it's mobile inflatable structure, and what was the reaction, and were you able to tap into any of that to generate conversation or action?
It's quite difficult. Like a good friend of mine who worked as a community liaison, because you need permission to film there and do all those things, and her family's actually from the area. She actually works in a collective that do a lot of organising around the gentrification of various kampungs along that river, because it's like the government sees it as prime land, and a lot of those settlements are squatter settlements along there. So not for that structure, and for, like, I came in as an artist and I was really clear about that, but it was more doing these kind of gestures and creating a kind of work that it could be a collaboration together. It was really simple. Like, my intentions were really simple because like the inflatable, my connection to the area is really temporary. 3 months is nothing. And although I have these continued relationships with people who are pretty active there, it's also not my place to do that, and I don't have that deep understanding of that. But, even creating those kind of events is kind of significant in the way that they just don't really have any resources. Like, this is, having, like, donating them pens and things like that is quite significant. And you don't see that in the film, because it's so beautiful, it's so cared for, like, you know, all the plants in the tins and all that kind of stuff, like the way that there's such a pride of place in that area, you really don't get that feeling of that, and the way that everyone looks after each other. But, you know, we kind of did things like used big sacks of rice as the weights in the inflatable and then donated them to the kampung. So it was like this kind of, like, each sort of bit, and just having an event was a quite special experience there. In the, on their basketball, their badminton court, which is like a concrete slab. And yeah, it was just, you know, we had lots of food and an event, which was just, quite simple.
A friend of mine married a woman from Yogyakarta, and he goes back there frequently with her, and he's American, she's Indonesian, and he was telling me one day that nobody goes hungry in Indonesia. If you're walking down the road and you pass a house and you're hungry, you simply just go up to the door and knock on the door and they'll feed you. So this sense of community, this sense of sharing, of identifying the other as being part of you, it seems at odds with the idea of displacement, and which is really at the heart of this idea of displacement, is really the idea of ensuring that money flows to other people instead of to the people that are there. It's really at the heart of it, is there is this kind of selfishness. And so I'm wondering what you saw of that, if that's a similar kind of interpretation or feeling that you had. There's a kind of a dichotomy between their ability to share things and this notion of pushing people out.
Yeah, well, I think it's just to do with class, right? So there's this quite clear, I mean, Indonesia is quite, there's a lot of corruption, and there's a huge class divide, and this area is very separated from, say, the artist communities that I hang out in, which, you know, I mean, it's actually a lot more mixed than, say, my experience in Australia, where it is, like, predominantly white, middle-class arts crowd. But in Indonesia, it's a little bit more mixed, but most people are more middle-class than, or they have a bit more resources than the people in these kampungs. So there's these definitely class divides, so the people who are pushing these people out are mostly corrupt officials. And these people are a separate community. It's, you know, even though they're looked after, they're looked after by probably people closer to their class in that social structure, as far as I can tell, you know, as far as my understanding goes.
I just had an observation sort of going back. What this made me think of in terms of Philadelphia, because, you know, watching this, one thing that's so striking is how, you know, how strongly and simply the folks in the film believe in the ghosts. You know, there's no question about the ghosts. The ghosts are completely real. And I'm sure there are people in Indonesian society who, you know, are dismissive of that, or you know, as we can look at that from the outside and kind of dismiss that as superstition. But for the people, it's very real. And I think one thing that I've experienced, particularly in work, I've been like in Point Breeze and in other places that are being gentrified, is that their people have some very strongly held beliefs about what's going to happen in the process of gentrification that may or may not be actually true. But the level that people from the outside often dismiss those beliefs is always astounding to me. Just like being on the Facebook Newbold Neighbors group and the amount of just sort of insult that's heaped on the fact that some people are worried that there's going to be $5 million houses built in Point Breeze. But those beliefs are still, you know, they're a belief that people have for a reason. And that's, you know, that's just something that I was thinking of.
I really feel like I'm on UHF. Are you like Weird Al right now? I was thinking, I was just trying to conceptualize how you'd make a connection, I guess, geographically. I agree with Lou to some extent that there's something really local happening here, and maybe that's where I'll end up when I say this. But one of the things that I really thought was really fascinating about your film is the way that geographic space, the geographic space of graves were not graves, you know? So like being able to conceptualize a graveyard when it's not like a familiar site of graves, which I think is really applicable to here, you know, being on Lenape territory and being able to try to like imagine this as, you know, a grave site that can never be a grave site, that can never appear as graves. And I guess I was thinking about that in relation to your film, because I don't actually necessarily know in the end of the film, like who, like the trajectory, like who were displaced in the previous cycle of displacements. And like something about the ghosts, it's like what strikes me is that they're not ancestors. They're not even necessarily like some of the stories about these are people that we knew and they're dead now, but a lot of them are animalistic or creaturely. And that sort of like, and like even the way they pronounced the words sounded almost linguistically different. And maybe that's just my imagination. But like, you know, Gendero or whatever, they say it in a more throaty voice. And mm-hmm. I wondered if they were originally Javanese.
Yes.
But like the sense of who are they thinking of when they're thinking of these ghosts, I guess. Is there a human correlate? That's my question.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's more... Yeah, I think you picked up on what it is like. It is just more spirits, like as a general thing. But I think it's really interesting when you do think about that connection to place, where they are thinking about that being a graveyard. And even, you know, there are a couple of gravestones built into things, like having one in the kids' playground, you know, right near the swings and stuff. And just, they're very, when you're walking through, you sort of don't notice them at first. And then, like spending more time, you're like, oh, that's actually a gravestone in there. And some of them have been mortared over. So, you know, it's just building on top of things and using the material of the gravestones for pavement or, you know, part of a wall or things like that. So they become building materials and become really abstract to what they are. Whereas, you know, from a Western sensibility, people just wouldn't really build a house out of, you know, old gravestones. It's, you know, it's so loaded in that way. I don't know. What am I saying? But yeah, you're right. Like the Gendawu and stuff is Javanese. So some of those people are speaking Javanese, but some Bahasa Indonesian, and those words sort of slip in. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what Virgil was saying. Yeah.
But also, I mean, the man buying cigarettes doesn't strike.
Oh, that one's amazing. So, the old lady who tells that story about the man ghost in his underwear who arrives at the door, she spoke for so long and she was so animated, and I was like, She was speaking Japanese. I had no idea what she was saying. And I was like, wow, this is going to be great. And then I like sat down with my friend to translate and I was like, really? It was like, but it was like, I kind of really enjoyed the fact that this story was like so inane, like, but it was so like, it was just belief, right? It was like, he didn't come back for his cigarette, so he must not be a human, you know? Like, and it was like, or he could be a drunk guy at 4 o'clock in the morning, but that's just my Western sensibilities projecting that onto her story, right? Like, there's just this, such a strong belief in spirits and ghosts that her assumption is one thing and mine's completely the other, so.
Oh, I mean, that just made me think, you know, inevitably you're kind of like I, as of the viewer, I'm kind of interpreting things about the explanations of the ghosts and the ghost stories, right? You know, and I couldn't help but think in certain cases, I mean, so you say like it's the drunk, it might be the drunk guy, right? Like there's a scenario, right? And there's a way that, so I couldn't help but also be doing that, you know, sort of throughout it, and kind of wondered also about like maybe a sort of subtext of like sexual violence that might kind of be, again, you know, kind of thinking about like what are the sort of like various uses of ghosts, and not necessarily dismissing the existence of ghosts, but also thinking like what other things are sort of going, you know, going on. And I don't know. So I'm just curious what you have to say about that. Cause you know, sort of back to what I was saying earlier about kind of like the metaphor. I mean, it seems like what is so sort of useful about it, even if there are ghosts, is that there is like so much psychic sort of trauma that goes along with like living life in this world, and especially under sort of like precarious conditions, you know. And so I'm just curious what you have to say about
that. Yeah, well, I think I mean, that I definitely have sort of like kind of analyzed various ghosts in various ways. So there's a type of woman ghost who if the kids are out, she catches them and puts them in a hole in her back. And so she hangs out in big trees. So I guess in a way, like my way of analysing that would be like, it's a way to keep children close to the house. You know, there's a shape-shifting man ghost who basically rapes women. And it is like, you can't help but go, well, is this a way to kind of keep peace within the kampung? Small amounts of money go missing, it must be a tuyul. You know, these kind of things, you just sort of wonder how much these ghosts are used as a way to, because they're living in such close proximity, like to a way to be like, okay, well, this money's gone missing, someone's taking it, it's got to be someone here, right? So in that way, it's like, okay, is it just, is it a tool for creating community and living in amongst all this stuff? It's, yeah.
So I wanted to build on that comment of Daniel's a little bit and what you guys have just said. When I first saw the film, I wondered if in Philadelphia we would ever be able to hold on to memory in that way, such that it would be legible what we've lost in a way and what's been displaced. And there was something about the film that methodologically I was fascinated by, because I thought, wow, it would be so great if we could actually be that attentive to what has been here before. It's so hard in Philadelphia for reasons that maybe are many, to just hold on to that sense of what's preceded us and what's been displaced. So I guess that prompts this question for me, like what justice would mean in that community. In a certain sense, you've given us all these different ways to enter into that question. But you also spoke about how nothing can make up for the injustice of losing a sense of community. Right, you spoke about how that can't be remunerated and that can't be just reproduced or reciprocated in any easy way when lost. And so, like, what would justice mean? Is it just something that one arrives at poetically through this film? Is justice just, is it never possible? It's lost, it's in the past. What does justice mean to you?
I guess justice would be to be able to maintain a sense of community, which always shifts and it always changes in itself, but that kind of almost forced destruction of a community, I think, is the hardest to deal with when people feel powerless against changes that they don't want. I think that's the hardest thing to deal with. I mean, I do a lot of stuff in my own area over the last 15 years in Sydney, and seeing that area being gentrified has been really quite intense, and seeing that change, it has a big public housing population, big Indigenous population, well, it used to, and now just seeing how much it's changed, it does feel really unjust. So
was your film the mechanism through which you sought to not empower others, but contribute to that process of empowerment?
I wouldn't give myself that much credit, but I would say it's to think about, like I'm hoping it's a way to think about this kind of displacement, and I think my own way of thinking about that injustice maybe comes through, where I'm not, I don't think I'm trying to say that this being pushed out is a good thing. Yeah, it's hopefully a way to think about these things. I don't think it's powerful enough to, I'm not that idealistic to think that it would change things, but it's a tool to think about displacement.
I guess I'm curious how much development there's actually been there, and how the degree of, if there is any respect from these developers coming in for what they're walking into with all of this.
No to the developers sort of considering the people there. I don't think they really do. There's a big hotel development that was underway when I was there, so late last year. And there's a bank being built. There's, since I was there a couple of years ago, there's a whole section of the kampung's been turned into a big apartment block where the guy that's quite yellow shot, the guy in the wooden mirror, he lives in up a few floors in that apartment block, which he used to live on the ground there. So it's definitely underway, but this is, the mayor sort of announced that he wanted to actively gentrify that area only 2 years ago. So it's sort of the beginning of it.
There was some kind of road made or something above the river that they
were planning to build? Yeah, so he talks about a flyway over the river. So a big, ridiculous ideas, because this river actually goes all the way up to Merapi. So a volcano that erupts regularly and floods the river. Really ridiculous plans, and on that flyway they want to build a massive tourist hotel, which seems like the stupidest idea, because I've been there 2011 after Merapi erupted, the water flooded a bunch of that, a big part of that kampung, so that the rice bags were built up to here just after, and the water level was really high. Now you sort of see it and the water level's quite low, but it was right up those embankments. So kind of ridiculous ideas as well, but sort of big picture tourist dollar vision. The new mayor is really interested in promoting Yogyakarta as a big tourist town. So there's a lot, he has this vision for 8 new hotels, this many apartment blocks, which is really not, the charm of Yogyakarta is that it is low density.
Right, there has to be some kind of tension there between at what point does it change so much that
it'll just become a mini Jakarta. That's kind of what what his vision is, which, isn't a great thing. It's, Jakarta's a pretty hard city, so the charm of Jogja is what I guess tourists do like as well. I think it's difficult because there is that class divide. So the kind of lower socioeconomic groups feel they don't really have much say in those kind of developments. And that the organizing in those kampungs, like a lot of those people don't even consider that they have rights. So that's like my friend who is working with people in those kampungs is partly about organizing events and ways to educate people about, like, maybe we can work together to, you guys do have some sort of rights to be here, even not officially, but you know, there's ways to hopefully fight those developments.